Chafches Amud Beis. So we're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we should be up to Tnan Hasam. How many lines is that from the bottom? Maybe about 10. And it starts with Tnan Hasam in the regular standard Gemaras. Let's just review quickly what we saw yesterday. There was a difference between Rabbi Nachman and Reish Lakish, respectively, with regard to Hesped. And the Gemara makes a big deal about this because Reish Lakish was in Eretz Yisrael and Rav Nachman was in Bavel. And the Gemara told two stories about whether or not these giants were willing to deliver a hesped at someone's funeral. And the Gemara says that, well, I'll start backwards in a sense. We'll start with Rav Nachman, who refuses to give a hesped in Bavel. And the reason he refused to give a hesped in Bavel is because the niftar, although he was a scholar in one sense, or he appeared to be a scholar, he learned Hilchasa, Sifra, and Sifri, which is a massive amount of Torah knowledge. The word Hilchasa apparently means Mishnah, and Sifra, Sifri are different drashos, or let's say Hilchasa, these are halachic midrashim that derive conclusions. Tosefta, of course, the Brisa. So he basically knew all of, he had mastered all the knowledge of that time. You know, they didn't have Sfarim like we have.
For sure.
And despite that, after his death, when they approached Rav Nachman to deliver a hesped, he kindly bowed out. He refused to give the hesped. And the reason why is because this person, although he learned Torah, he was not Meshamesh Talmidei Chachamim. He had no tradition, no transmission of the Torah whatsoever. You know, we have the Mishnah of us, Moshe Kivul Torah Mesina, Mesor Leoshu, Yeshu's Kingdom. It's got to be Mesiris HaTorah. And that's what Shemesh Talmidei Chachamim is all about. And when Rav Nachman refused to give the hesped, he used a very strong language. He says, Hai Tzana Demoli Sifrei Dechaser. On the one hand, you know, this person is full of Moli Sifri. He's full of Sfarim. But yet, Dechaser. Dechaser means they're incomplete, maybe even lost. And therefore, Rav Nachman refused to eulogize him, meaning that basically his knowledge was not worth much. It didn't amount to much. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, he was in Eretz Yisrael, and his situation was that somebody used to come from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and the people in Eretz Yisrael very much appreciated the Torah that he brought with him. And it's a little bit unclear exactly how great of a scholar this person was, because the Gemara says that when he came to Eretz Yisrael and there was Torah being taught, there were 24 rows of students. Now, it's not clear whether the 24 rows of students were there to hear this person's Torah, which means he had a massive, you know, transmission of the Torah, or he himself sat in the 24th row, but he himself participated in the Torah study. But in any event, Reish Lakish was extremely broken up by his death, and he delivered a very, shall we say, arousing, profound eulogy. So the Gemara ends this sugya by making a comment, by making an observation. Tochazi, come in and check out the situation. Ma ben tkifei di ara di Yisrael lechasidi de Bavel. Meaning, Reish Lakish was known as a takiv. Takiv is a person who is unyielding, no compromise. You know, he's a man of principle, and there's no flexibility. And yet, despite that, when it came to the death of someone, he became very emotional and very, and he related to it with tremendous feeling. In contrast, Rav Nachman in Chutzlitz was known as a soft kind of person. He was a chassid. He was pious. He would be very giving in Bein Olam L'Chavero. And yet, when he had to take a stand on a person who died, and he felt that this person should not be sort of a flagstaff of a Talmud Chacham because there was nothing inside, he deferred. He was unwilling. He took a real stand. Now, the impression you get when you read this last comment to the Gemara is that the Gemara is complimenting Eretz Yisrael as opposed to Bavel. And no doubt that's true. But I think, in a different sense, I think the Gemara might be saying that the Gemara is not making a sweeping statement comparing Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, but rather a statement about Tkifei versus Chaside. And what I think what the Gemara is saying is that you look at a person and you shots him up as someone who's very sympathetic and very soft, always extending himself. But yet when it comes to the matter of principle, and here Rav Nachman felt it's very important that people realize that this is not the way Torah was meant to be transmitted. So he took a very strong stand. And then Reish Lakish, on the other hand, looks like a person who's very intellectual. You know, he's a scholar. He looks a little bit above the rank and file person. He's called a takif. And yet, when it came to death, when it came to grief and mourning and hesped and covered for the departed, here he became as mushy as you can imagine. You know, he became very emotional. And he felt a covered up mess here in a person who was a genuine scholar, came to visit them on a regular basis from Chutz Laretz, and came to Eretz Yisrael. He has to be given all the respect in the world. You know, I often think of my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. I reminisce about him. If there ever was an intellectual who walked the face of the earth, he was it. I mean, he knew so much about everything. I mean, secular knowledge, worldly knowledge. It was kind of frightening. They say that when his wife was sick, he knew more about her disease than the physicians did, because he just took out all the books and he read them. And some people thought he was a little bit distant, you know, he was cold. But sometimes you saw his emotions. And as a maspid, he was incredible. Again, you know, people list all his intellectual achievements and the areas and disciplines, both within Torah and outside of Torah, that he mastered, the books that he wrote and the lectures that he gave. But on the list, I mean, people might laugh at me for saying this, but I think you should add the fact that he was a maspid, because to Rav Soloveitchik, the concept of a hesped was to try to define the essence of the person. He would literally penetrate through veils and veils and say, who was this person? He would always begin his essay with the same apology that a person is really a closed book. We don't know a person. We don't even know ourselves. But nevertheless, he would make the greatest effort. You know, the famous hespedim that he gave from Chaim Heller or from Chaim Ozer, for his uncle, the Brisker Rav.
The Rebbetzin of
Tolna. The Rebbetzin of Tolna, an incredible hesped. I've quoted it millions of times. I mean, you talk about the position of a woman in Judaism. I mean, you hear that hesped, you know. But many, many other hespedim. And sometimes, even when he darshened, not necessarily a hesped, you saw that same kocha hesped. His ability to cut through and define everything. But there was something else about Rav Soloveitchik, his ability to carry the audience with him, up to uplift them and get them so emotional. For example, on Tisha B'Av, you know, we used to sit with him from nine in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, and he would read Kiddush with us. And again, you saw that same kind of complex personality. He would read a line and make some, you know, comment in Chochmah about Rav Elazar HaKalir, and then as soon as he finished the line, he would start crying. You know, you could hear the wailing in his voice. If you've ever heard of Rita Haftorah, for example, especially for Shabbos Chazon, or if you heard of Rita Haftorah for a Tainis Tzivur, he was so emotional. He put all his feelings into it. And I think, in a sense, this is what we see about Reish Lakish. That, you know, Reish Lakish was known as a takif, and no doubt he was an intellectual, a great scholar, a teacher of Torah. We're going to soon see that when he came to traveling over the water, he was quite weak, and he relied on a Talmud of his to carry him over the water. We'll see about that. But here, when it came to a Hespid, this was primary on his agenda. Here's an individual who doesn't even live locally. He's really a Babylonian who comes to Eretz Yisrael from time to time. But Reish Lakish appreciated that the man enhanced the Torah knowledge of the community in Eretz Yisrael, and he went out of his way to be sure that he would be the maspid.
If I remember correctly, I think that the Rav used to put on his tefillin all the way without putting on the tefillin shorosh until after the he had done it. Yeah. He goes, so apparently someone came over to him and said, Rabbi, I don't think you did it the right way. And so he didn't say, well, you know, I do it this way. Not, you know, he didn't go right to the individual. He said, maybe I'll do it
the
different way. Very, very.
All right, so we're going to start with Tnan Hasam. So we're on Chav Chesam and Beis, and we're about 10 lines up from the bottom. And unfortunately, I don't have my Masifta today, so any comments that I make will be my own comments. And tomorrow, believe it, I'll see if we can fill in the Masifta, because I don't have access to one today. Tnan Hasam. So the Gemara now is quoting a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and we're about to embark upon a very long Agadita. You know, Masech the Megillah is full of Agadita, as we know, and we've tried to sweat through it. Here's another Agadita. This Agadita that we're learning, based on a mission in Avos, is about not enjoying the benefit of your status as a Torah scholar. You know, there are many different ways in which a person could expect that people around him will give him respect and honor, they'll do things for him, they'll be mishamish him, and he has to be very careful about that. So careful that the Mishnah tells us that the shtamish b'toga chalaf. Toga means the crown of Torah, right? Torah is always compared to a crown. For example, the Mishnah says shlosha ksarim nichtu ben Yisrael. There were three ksarim. There's the keser kahuna, the keser malchus, and the greatest keser of them all is keser Torah. And the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that when Klal Yisrael were receiving Har Sinai, each Jew was crowned with two crowns of Torah. But the question is, what do you do with the crown of Torah? If the crown of Torah indicates on the outside how great you are on the inside, and people imitate you, and they gravitate towards you, and they want to hear your Torah, that's one thing. But if you're going to use the crown because, you know, I'm very important, and you're very haughty about it, and you want to get benefits for it from other people, then the Mishnah uses a very strong term, chalaf. Chalaf is as if to say he loses his right to live in this world. And this is the famous phrase that are called kardam lachbarba. You're familiar with that phrase? You can't use the Torah as a shovel to dig with the shovel, meaning to get benefits. You know, the Rambam dedicates almost an entire chapter to this concept in Hilchas Talmud Torah. Very strict, harsh laws about how he shouldn't take money from the tzibur. And the honest truth is, there's no question about it that the Rambam, if you read it simply, straightforward, was opposed to kolel learning and to being supported. I don't even know if he would have advocated a Rebbe taking a salary for his teaching. And the Keser Mishnah deals with this. He tries to understand, how does the Rambam envision Torah scholarship and the transmission of Torah if you're not going to benefit from your Torah and at least get a salary? So he tries to say maybe Shasat Chak and Eis Lasos Lashem, you know, different answers. It's one of the longest Keser Mishnahs in all of the Mishnah Torah. So the Gemara tells us, Tani Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said about this Mishnah, Zeh mishtamish b'misha shone halachos. Now, what's going on over here? Reish Lakish says that, let's say you're a great scholar, and someone else wants to serve you, and you want to benefit from that person, but that person also is a bit of a scholar. But he's not the same scholar that you are. You know, he's a person sheshona halachos. You know, he can teach you halacha, but nevertheless, even if he's shown halachos, kisra shel Torah, he is already crowned with the keser Torah. Now, you may remember before that we spoke about different levels of Torah scholarship. And we spoke about that individual who died in Babel and Rav Nachman refused to eulogize him. He was also Tani Hilchasa. He also was a scholar in the sense that he learned halachos. And now you want to enjoy the benefit from this person. So the Gemara says he also has a Kisra Shel Torah. And therefore you have to be very careful. Now we're about to learn a story about Ula and a quote from Reish Lakish. And what we're going to try to understand in the next piece of Gemara is whether Ula agrees with Reish Lakish or disagrees. The Amar Ula says, L'shtamesh inish b'man d'toni arba. Okay, this Gemara of Ula needs a little bit of introduction, if you'll allow me. The halacha is very sensitive to a difference between someone who studies Torah, accumulates Torah knowledge, but for himself, as opposed to someone who sees himself as a link in the great Mesorah in the tradition and transmits the Torah that he learns to someone else. The Gemara says, for example, at the end of Masechta Sukkah, on the Pasuk in Mishlei, Torah Chesed al Lishona, Ezu Torah Chesed, the Gemara says, well, what's Torah Chesed? Is it a Torah that's Chesed, a Torah that's not Chesed? El Torah al Manas Lelamda, if the Torah is being studied in order to transmit it to others, that's called Torah Chesed al Lishona. That's a great mandrega unto itself. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described in the bracha that we recite daily in the morning, HaMalame Torah Liyam Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Malame, par excellence. And I believe that the difference between someone who studies Torah and someone who teaches Torah is not just a quantitative distinction, but it's a qualitative distinction. It's a whole new category. And this is going to be an introduction to Ula, because Ula says the following. You want to know whether you can benefit from someone else because you're a great scholar and he's, let's say, you know, you're a postdoc and he's, let's say, in his first year of college, of undergraduate school, or first year of graduate school. So it all depends. Who is this other person that you might benefit from? Is he someone who's minded Tani? He knows, and we'll see what the word arba means in just a second. Then Ula says you can derive benefit from him. He's still in undergraduate school. But lolish tamish b'manda masni arba. Masni means not only is he a student of Torah, but he's also a teacher of Torah. Not only is he knowledgeable, but he transmits the Torah to others. That level, then for sure he has Keser Torah, he's a teacher of Torah, he imitates HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and don't benefit from him, don't take any benefit from him. Oh, now what is this Arba? So you know that there's Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Three out of the six are very, very relevant, even in our time, even after the Churban HaBayis. That's Noshim, Nizikin, and Moed, or Zmanin, if you want to call it. And in the yeshiva world today, that's what they focus on in most of the yeshivas. I would say 90% of the yeshivas, Noshim, and Zmanim, and Nizikin. There are three other Sidrei Mishnais. There's Kodshim, Zroim, and Taras. Zroim and Taras are hardly relevant today. Now we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and Zroim is becoming more relevant. Kodshim, l'chora, is not relevant at all. But we have to learn Kodshim for two reasons. First of all, the Meheri Yibona. Imagine the Mikdash is built, nobody knows what to do, and there's going to be a tremendous bilbul here, you know. But now, Baruch Hashem, more and more yeshivas are learning Kodshim. And number two, because the Gemara says that if in the absence of the Migdash we can't bring a carbon, we can do even better than bring a carbon. We can learn the Torah of the carbon. And the Gemara says that if someone learns the parash of Ola, is malav akosuf ki'ilu hikriv Ola. Elsewhere, the Gemara says, Misha loved Torah schatos is malav akosuf. So there's a whole discussion. The Chidah is curious to know why one Gemara mentions Ola but refuses to mention chatos. And he says because chatos is eaten by the Kohen, whereas Ola goes all the way up to Shamayim. You know, it's Kulei Kolil, it's completely burnt up. So he says, you want to bring a carbon Ola, so you want to learn the Torah's Ola. Okay, you're not taking away from the Kohen. But if you want to get credit for a Chatos by learning Chatos, then you're stealing a little bit from the Kohen because he has rights to the Basar. Okay, anyway, this it's much more profound than that. I'm just telling you the... So, what are the four starim? So we have the following. We have Noshim, Nizikin, Moed, and Kodshim. We're going to add Kodshim to the list, as we said before, because we must learn Kodshim, because by learning Kodshim, we replace the Karbonos that we should have been bringing, we should be bringing if we only had the Mikdash. So that the two statements of Ula both relate to someone who knows four starim. But the difference is that the guy that you're allowed to benefit from, he knows four starim, but the guy that teaches four starim, he's on a much higher level. Now, as I said to you before, what I want to know is, does Ula disagree with the next statement of Reish Lakish? Take a look. The Gemara says, Ki had the Reish Lakish have a ozil bi urcha. Reish Lakish was on the way. Mata urkima demaya. Urkima means he got to a river of water, or maybe he calls it a pool of water, and he couldn't handle it. So imagine you're on the way and you get to water and you can't get across the water. There was no one there to rent him a boat. Now, by the way, this is the same Reish Lakish who, before he became a Baal Tshuva, the Gemara says about Metzia, he was able to jump over a river. And then he met Rabbi Yochanan. You remember the story? And Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "Chelich lo raisa," you know, that your power, you should, instead of being the head of all the underground, you know, all the mafia, you should join us and become a Talmud Chacham, take all that koyach and channel it into Torah learning. So Reish Lakish made a deal with him. Apparently Rabbi Yochanan had a very beautiful sister. He says, "All right, if I become a Talmud Chacham, would you marry me?" So this is the whole question about Reish Lakish, whether he was motivated shalom l'shem shemayim. But Lee Netter will talk about that soon too. So how did Reish Lakish get over across the river? Because after he the Gemara says about Metzia that once he accepted Torah, he couldn't cross the river. The strongest guy on earth, now Hercules, he became a weak guy. Boy, I feel the influence of this coffee. Does this go right into your bloodstream or what?
I think it does.
Anyway, I feel like I'm getting hyper here because of this coffee, you know.
That's Taster's Choice, that's
what. That's it, Taster's Choice. We all hope here. Okay, so remind me. Anyway, Osahu Gavra comes along a certain person. Usually when the Gemara says Ahu Gavra, it means someone choshev, usually. And Arkevei, whom Arkivoto, right, he puts him on his shoulders, Akatvei, Fikom Abrele. Now I think what happened was that this is the way I imagine the scene. When Reish Lakish gets up to the water, he's looking in this direction. All of a sudden something comes under his feet with his hand and picks him up. So Reish Lakish didn't even get a chance to find out who this guy was, you know. So they're on the way, and he's carrying him, and he says to him, Amrele, Koritz, tell me a little about yourself. You know, I can't even see you. You're underneath me. Have you learned Torah? Amrele, Karina. Now, usually the word Karina is Milosha Mikra. Mikra means Psukim in Tanakh. That's the lowest level of Torah knowledge. What we call Torah Shevachsah. So he says, Tonis. No, I'm sorry, I think I skipped something here. Amalei Karina. Karina, yes. Oh, now Reish Lakish is getting really nervous. Because what level of knowledge does this man have? Tanis. Tanis is Mishnah. And he says to him, you know, usually a person is more modest, but here, you know, Reish Lakish, the Gadol Hador, is asking him, how much Torah do you know? So he's not going to pull any punches. He says, Tanina Arba Sidrei Mishnah. I know these four Sdorim. Now, Reish Lakish didn't ask him the next question. What next question do we think that Ula would have asked him?
Are you a teacher?
Exactly. Are you a teacher of Torah? I'm beginning to suspect that Ula and Reish Lakish are not exactly identical. Because at this point, Reish Lakish says to the fellow, Pasaltloch, you have disqualified yourself, Arba Ture, as a result of four Turim. You know, this is like the Torah wrote four rows, you know, the four. He was the first one to divide up Halach into four sections. The Mechaber, who came about 2.5 centuries, 3 centuries later, he built on the shoulders of the Torah. So he says to him, you have four rows. These are the pillars, so to speak, that hold up the Torah. V'ta'ad bar Lakish ha-katvech, and you're carrying the son of Lakish on your shoulders? Now it's very interesting that Reish Lakish first of all, he describes himself in third person. He doesn't even mention his first name. He calls himself Bar Lakish. And I'm thinking to myself that maybe Reish Lakish is a kind of a split personality. Again, Freud would certainly subscribe to this. You know, you've heard of the concept of a split personality? Yes? No? Anybody? You heard of it? A split personality? In fact, there's a very famous movie, I mean, from 50 years ago called The Three Faces of Eve. You remember that? That was a classic. She had three different personalities. That was really complicated. But every person has a little bit of like a double personality. So one part of Reish Lakish, he talks about himself in third person, as if to say, who am I? You know, if he would speak about himself in first person, that's something that you see. That's the obvious. You know, he is the Gadol Hador, together with Rabbi Yochanan and Eretz Yisrael. They carry the whole generation. But he's talking about himself as if looking at himself from a side. So, who am I? And you're carrying me? And then he says to him, Shdei bar Lakish alamaya, throw me into the water. Cast me into the water. I mean, this is really amazing because I'm not sure if Reish Lakish was Mark Spitz, what do you call it, an Olympic swimmer? I don't know. But this is like almost Pikuach Nefesh. But again, what's the other option? The Mishnah says in Avos, Cholaf. Cholaf means you're going to die. So at least if he throws me into the water, I have a chance, maybe I'll survive. Amalei, no. Nichali diashme'ina lemar. Now the word shame'i means a servant. And that's a noun. If you turn it into a verb, it becomes ashme'inon in Aramaic. Meaning, if you conjugate it as a verb, it means, I want to serve you. Lemar. Okay, he speaks to him in third person. Meaning, I know who you are. Don't try to fool me. You're not just Bar Lakish, my friend. You are Reish Lakish, the Gadol Hador. So we hachi, at this point, Reish Lakish doesn't know what to do. Because on the one hand, he doesn't want to deny this young man an opportunity to serve him. And the person, this young man, even though he knows four Sidri Mishnais, he's no slouch. But nevertheless, he has a tremendous desire to serve a Talmud Chacham. So that's on the positive side. On the negative side, Reish Lakish doesn't want to take advantage of the services of someone who's a Talmud Chacham on his own right. And probably he's also afraid of the cold water. That was a joke. Anyway, so what does he say? Let's find a solution to this problem. You know what? Ihachi, I have a kosav ashlishi yachriya b'neihem. And what's that? Gemar mini hamilsa. Learn something from me. And if I teach you something, then we can apply the halacha. And this I'm going to quote the Rambam now in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam writes, Kol malacha sha'eved osa l'rabo, talmud osa l'rabo. So I remember my Rebbe used to ask the question, in the case of an Eved, he has to do Malacha for his Rabbah because it was a Kinyan Avdus. Whether it's a Kinyan Chazaka, Kinyan Domim, whichever way, the methods of being Kona and Eved. But how is a Rebbe Kona's Talmud? Do you hear the Kasha? Only the Rav would ask such a Kasha. You know, what was the Rabbah says? Kishem Sheha Eved Osa Malacha L'Rabbah, Kacha Talmud Osa Malacha L'Rabbah. I mean, in the case of an Eved, there's a Kinyan Avdus. I mean, Eved Gufo Koni Ladono. But in the case of a Talmud, how is he Kona the Eved? Kona the Talmud. So it was brilliant. The Rav said the following. There's one day in the Gemara that says that Una Uman Kona Bishvach Keli. Meaning, if you give me raw materials, a piece of clay, And I'm an artisan and I form an object. I'm a craftsman. So the halacha is, according to this mandiyom, and I think that's how we paskin, is that I own the increment, meaning you gave me something that's worth one, and now it's worth five. You own one, and I own four. All the increment, all the improvement, because uman kona v'shvach keli. There's a kinyan called creation. Creation itself is a kinyan. God is the ultimate owner of the universe because He created the universe. And the Gemara says, a person wants to see his own. God created man as a creator. We are all creators. We can imitate God and we can create. The greatest creation is when you fashion a Talmud. And that's why the profession of teaching Torah is such a glorious profession. Again, monetarily, maybe lately I have to change my mind, but up until yesterday I would have told you it's not a very lucrative field, to go into. But nevertheless, on a spiritual level, it's an amazing, glorious opportunity. And what it means is that you fashion the Talmud. Now, I'm wondering exactly how Reish Lakish was Kone, this Talmud, who knew Arba Turim, he knew four Sidrei Mishnah, by teaching him one single halacha. But Chazal say that if you teach someone one halacha, you have to call him your Rebbe. If you learn one halacha from someone, you have to call him your Rebbe. But it could be that this halacha is something very, very fundamental. The only thing that bothers me is, why did Reish Lakish assume that this Talmud would not know this halacha? So I want to say the following. There was no question that he knew the halacha, but he didn't know exactly how the halacha evolved. What do I mean? The Mishnayis will tell you this is Doraisa and this is Darabban. And the Mishnayis are very sensitive to that distinction in halacha because they're nafkaminas, sofik Darabban and sofik. But the Mishnayis don't tell you why the Rabbanan instituted something. And that has tremendous repercussions sometimes. And that's what I think Reish Lakish is about to teach. So let's give a little bit of a background. We know that the Torah has something called a nida and something called a zava. And there are two major differences between nida and zava. A nida becomes tmeya benida with a smaller speck of dam. Lekula, a zava, has to have three re'ils on three consecutive days. However, there is a kula nida that doesn't apply to zava. And that is that a nida could see dam for seven full days consecutively, and she goes to mikveh after the 7 days, she's tahora. A zav has to count what's called zayinikiyah, seven clean days. So on the one hand, there's a chumra in zava because the zava, I'm sorry, there's a kula in zava because a zava doesn't become a zava, she doesn't acquire that tumma until she sees three re'ils, where a nida would see one re'ia. But on the other hand, once the zava has accumulated these three re'ios, now we go really harsh on a zava. And she has to count Zayin Nikim. If she sees one speck of dam within the Zayin Nikim, that's called a Re'ia Soseres, and it completely undermines the melos of Zayin Nikim, and she has to start from scratch. Now, how do you know whether a woman is a Nida or not a Nida? So again, the Rambam understands it that the first time she sees dam in her life, she becomes a Nida. And then after 7 days, she goes to a period called Yud Aleph Yomim, 11-day period of Yimei Ziva, which means that if she sees 3 days consecutively within those 11 days, she becomes a Zava. After that 11 days, she automatically goes back to the state of Anita if she sees Dam. So let's say, for example, a woman would see Dam and then 7 days later she's clean. She now enters into the 11 days of Ziva. If she has a Re'iyah, even on one day and then in a re on the next day, it's called Shomeres Yom Kinegdo. No, she doesn't become a Zava Gedola to require Zayin Nikiyim unless she sees the third day in a row. So let's say she didn't see 3 days in a row. Now she counts to the end of the other days. Any dam she sees after this will make her into a Nida, even with one re.
It's 3 days in a row or not three? It has to be day.
Yeah.
It could be twice in one day. That doesn't count.
Right? No, I don't think so. I think it has to be on 3 days. You're talking about a Zav, I think. In the case of a Zav, it's a little different.
That was right. We were learning earlier.
Yeah.
Well, why is it there's a certain size that a woman has to see before she's considered a nida?
No. No size whatsoever.
That's if she sees it on clothing as opposed to...
Oh, clothing is... That's called a kesem because that doesn't have hargosha. And if it doesn't have hargosha, we pass like Shmuel, that without hargosha, that's only durabon. So the whole institution of
she has to actually see blood itself in order for it to be...
Well, like she has to have hargosha. Again, you know, don't tell your wife this, because she'll tell you there's no such thing. Okay. Like, my wife denies it. But at the time of the Gemara, apparently, a woman could actually feel the dam coming out of her body. Today, I don't know if you probably take a survey of 100 women, maybe one woman will say, I feel it coming out. But so maybe there's something else called the hargosha that, I don't know, the body moves in a certain way, or she feels something oozing out down there. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what hargosha is. But anyway, when she finds a kesem, which means a stain, she didn't feel any hargosha. So that's only durabon. Okay. Now, all this that I told you is on a deraisal. Mirabonon, get this, if a woman sees the smallest amount of dam, we consider her as of a gedola and she needs zayin nikiya. How could that be? How could that be? Why would the Rabbanan go so far? So the Achronim try to work it out that maybe she saw a dam that came out ben hashmoshos and therefore belongs to the previous day, but it might belong to the day after. But even so, that's only two re'ios. So they come up with the wildest ideas to try to make one dam into three re'ios of three separate days. It's almost logically impossible. But here's where Reish Lakish adds another item, and this is based on Reb Zera. Take a look inside.
Oh.
What did he teach him? The Amar Reb Zera, Benos Yisrael, Hein Hichmiru Al Atzman. This is fascinating, Rabosa. In all the Rabbanans, except for this one, the Rabbanan enacted a Gzera. The Torah commands the Rabbanan, Asus Yag La Torah, right, it says, Mishmeres L'Mishmarti. Here, what's the Mishmeres L'Mishmarti? And the answer is, this is not a regular Drabon. This is Benos Yisrael Echmir Al Atzman. Now, I'm going to give you another mashal. I don't want you to equate it, but we bench after we eat a kezias. That's also Echmir Al Atzman. The Torah says, V'achalta v'savata u'birachta. And all you ate was a kezias pas. That's not enough to fill up your belly. That was also a chumrah that we accepted upon ourselves. And Chazal always say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nosei panim. He somehow looks the other way when Klal Yisrael accept upon themselves a chumrah. Now again, I'm not advocating that, you know, especially Erev Pesach. I mean, there's just the sky's end. You know, you could just drive yourself totally crazy. We call it the chametz cooties, you know. And you get to the point where you can't put anything down on the table because, you know, you'll be...
I just heard a great story about my wife's grandfather. He was Yerushalayim. He was born in Yerushalayim in 1905, and
wow.
He moved to America to go for Parnassan. When he married my wife's grandmother, she was Syrian. She was in Syrian community there. He was very, very strict, and her family wasn't quite as strict. And so, even though he ate rice during Pesach, he told her, I don't eat rice during Pesach because her family, he was afraid her family wouldn't check carefully. So he basically made his own, he's not going to eat no rice. But no. She was very, she was really angry when she found out that he actually, but he made this up for them. But he made this because they were in order to avoid that. But he took this chumrah upon himself. But it's,
so the women took upon themselves a chumrah. This is Benos Yisrael, you know, the tzaddikim of the tzaddikonios of Klal Yisrael. Shafilu roos tipas dam kechardol. They see only one drop of blood, like a mustard seed, but that's not enough to be matami was a zovi. You have to have three rios. His yoshvos all of shivanakiyah. They would sit clean. So, in other words, basically, they completely remove the distinction between the two Torah categories of nida and Zava, and they basically considered every Nida who saw one Tipas Dam, and all she has to do is wait 7 days, she could see straight for 7 days, it wouldn't change in one iota, and they considered her as a Zava. And a Zava Gdola requires Zayin Nikiyim. I mean, the implications of this Chumrah are mind-boggling, I mean.
That's this comments that Rav Zero lived after Rav Shlachi. So
yes. I was going to make that comment myself. I didn't see the footnote. Yeah.
Well, why? So why is it?
Why is it attributed to Rav Zera, not to Rav Shlokish? It seems that Rav Zera was the one who actually codified this. What I mean by codified it, in other words, it took a few generations until this Chumrah gained teeth, you know, and it became the official. So Rav Shlokish knew about this halacha, and he was aware of the fact that the Benos Yisrael accepted this Chumrah, but it was only Rav Zera who upgraded it to the status of an absolute halacha. Like, for example, today, you know, you can't say, well, I came from Syria, and in my part of Syria, we didn't have this Chumrah. I came from Brooklyn, New York. You know, I mean, well, that's also Syria. But I meant to, yeah. I was about to say New Jersey, and that's also Syria. But anyway, you know, I came from L.A. I don't know if I've been, they're probably Syrians there too. But in any event, you can't say, well, I didn't have this Chumrah. You know, because Rav Zera already gave it a tokef. You know, he was the one who upgraded it. Tana de Bei Eliyahu, Kolashana Halachos Move Tochloshu Ben Olam Abba, Shenemar Halichos Olam Lo. Okay, this is a pasuk at the end of Tanakh. It says Halichos Olam Lo. Al Tikri Halichos Ela Halachos. Okay, this is something that we have attached already to our prayers. You know? Okay, fine. He, by the way, I noticed here he has a footnote exactly why it's called Tana de Elio. Was it really Elio Anavi? That's hard to say. Alternatively, he says maybe this, the one who collected these prices, he was a scholar and his name was Elio. Fine. Okay. Tana Rabbanon, and here we're going to turn to Daf Chav Tes Amin Aleph. Now this sugi that we're about to learn now is a grafted sugya from Masechta Ksubos. And there are a lot more details there in Masechta Ksubos. That's the original sugya. And here's the issue, basically. We have two principles that at the face of it collide. It's like a tug of war, I call it. One principle is Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Talmud Torah is the greatest mitzvah in the world. And the flip side is Bittul Torah. The Gemara says that if you see Yisurin Chas V'Shalom, you're suffering and you can't figure out what your sin is, Tleu B'Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah is a very severe violation. Now we go to the other extreme. The Gemara says in Masechet Kedushin, Gadol Torah, Shemevi Lidei Maisa, that the greatest attribute of Torah study is that it prepares you for Maisa. So that in that sense, Torah study is only a means to an end. And the end and the ultimate goal is Mises, is fulfilling the Torah, implementing its teachings. So what happens, you know, all of Torah is about conflicts and tug of wars. You know, you have a conflict here, you have a mitzvah, but on the other hand, you have Talmud Torah. Now, normally, it works like this, that if the mitzvah can be fulfilled by someone else, that's called Efshal Asosei De'Acherim. You continue your Torah study. Let someone else do the mitzvah. Because Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. But if the mitzvah is incumbent upon you in a very unique way, no one else can fulfill that mitzvah, then you drop your learning, close the Gemara, and go do the mitzvah. So for example, if a physician was being called on an emergency, you can't say, well, I'm learning Torah. That would be what's called a Chassid Shota, the Gemara at the end of Sota. Chassid Shota means he's pious, but he's an idiot. You know, the Gemara gives an example. He doesn't want to save a woman because it's not sneer. She's drowning down the thing. That's called a Chassid Shota. We spoke about Mordechai. Do you remember that it says at the end of the Megillah, Rotzi L'Rov Echov? Were you around, Eric, for that? John, you remember that? That it turns out that Mordechai, at the end of his life, because he got the ring.
Yeah, he moved.
Yeah, he wasn't on the same level on Sanhedrin. You have to give up from his Torah learning in order to save Klal Yisrael. He was there in charge of protecting Klal Yisrael. Oh, so now let me ask you the following question. What comes first? Torah study or attending a funeral? If you'd asked me, I would have said Torah study comes first. Because who says you have to attend the funeral? Is it your obligation to attend the funeral? So now we have to really raise the following question. What is Kavod HaMes in the case of a funeral? Is it that one person shows up? Is it sufficient that 10 people show up and you have a minyan? Does everybody on the face of the universe have to show up? Well, take for example a wedding. We have the mitzvah of kvod, chosav akala, sameh, chosav akala. Well, basically, and this is, they used to say, I don't know if you ever heard of Rav Kuperman, Zichron Levrach, he passed away not long ago. He had one of the largest institutions for Torah learning for women. It's called the Michlala. You heard of it? It's between Beit Fagan on top and Givat Mordechai on the bottom.
Yeah, it's right and, to
Korah. Right. So he used to say about himself, if I would go to every wedding of every student of mine, I could close my Gemara. I would be totally in their house. So how do you wiggle through this? How do you sort this all out? So it says the following: Mevatlin Tavitor Lo Tzos Hames, you will go to the funeral and close your Gemara. You will go to the wedding, and I'll prove it to you. The Gemara, the Brisa illustrates this. Now, Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi in the Gemara in Ksubis becomes. I'm going to say this in a very extreme way, and what I'm about to tell you is absolutely wrong. But let me explain to you what I mean. He becomes a very controversial figure. Why? Because the Gemara goes on to describe what he did at weddings. If somebody would do at weddings today what Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi did then, they would put him into cherem. They would excommunicate him. The Gemara tells him also that he used to take the kala and he used to ride her on his shoulders. And there was murmurings, you know, how could he do such a thing? It's, you know, it's not sneistic and so forth. So the Gemara says that after he died, a pillar of smoke went up from Shamayim to indicate what a great tzaddik he was. And when they asked him about, you know, when he's still alive, they asked him, how can you carry it? He says, she's like a board to me. Like he doesn't feel anything about it. But again, we can't all be Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, but it's interesting that Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi becomes the paradigm of Hachnasas Kala. And he says, Omer Lov, that Hayim Mevatel Talmud Torah Lohotzas HaMes Lohotzas HaMes Ulachnasas Kala. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, what about Rav Kuperman? You know, Ein L'Dover Sof, you gotta close the Gemara. There's always a Levaya, you know, you just watch the signs here, the Pachka Villa here in Yerushalayim, or take for example weddings, you know, the weddings is just endless, Baruch Hashem. So the Brisa says the fine. This is really the essence of the Sugi and Ksuvus that I mentioned to you on Daf Yud Zayin, I think it is. There aren't enough people to fulfill the mitzvah of Kvod HaMes or Kvod HaKala Aval Yesham called Tzarko. If there are enough people there without you, is Ein Mevatlim. So what's the next question we have to ask? This is already not the Brisa. This is already the Gemara on this Brisa. What is called Tzarko? Again, is it 5 people, 10 people, is it 100 people, is the whole city, is it the whole state? And that's what the Gemara is going to address now. But Rabosai, here we have to add another point, and this is the sugya in Ksubis. Okay, so there is called Tzarko. Can you imagine a wedding, and 1,000 people are going to show up for the wedding. It's a massive amount of people. But you get invited to the wedding. What do I mean? You know, sometimes in the yeshivas, they put up a sign. Have you ever seen it? I don't know if you have it here in the shtibel. In Harnof, where I live, it's very common in the shtibel in Harnof is called Imre Shefer. Just if I ever use that term, you'll know it. So you walk into Imre Shefer, and the first thing you see on the wall is a hazmana. You know, they attach this. Everyone's invited. But if you get a personal invitation, maybe that's different. And that's the Gemara Ksubis, that your addition to the simcha could literally change the whole thing for the Chosan Kal. Again, you know, there's a whole discussion about what's the Iker Mitzvah. Is it the Kala? Is it the Chosan? Is it both? Very difficult nuances in the Sugya. So what we're about to learn is Kol Tzarko. Kol Tzarko means, you know what, you're just another body. We're counting bodies. But if we're not counting bodies, but you're, you know, when my wife and I got married, we were wondering, you know, I asked Rav Soloveitchik if he would be Masada Kiddushin, but we got married in August. In August, the Rav is in Boston, we were getting married in New York. Now, during the course of the year, he flew in from Boston to New York on a weekly basis, but then he gave 5 shiurim, or it's not twice that amount. But here, he would have to come in from Boston and get on the next plane back, and that's exactly what he did. And my whole wedding was, I mean, was built around about the Rebbe, that he came. I was the only person on the face of the earth who was ever wishing that Rav Moshe Feinstein would not come to his wedding, because my father-in-law knew Rav Moshe very well, and he expected Rav Moshe. Because if Rav Moshe Feinstein came to a wedding, Rav Soloveitchik would never agree to be Masada Kiddush, because of the cover that he had for the elder statesman, Rav Moshe. And just as luck had it, Rav Moshe couldn't make it that night. So I lucked out. Again, you know, if I say this publicly, they'll put me in chayrim, but I'm telling you guys, because the fact that the Rav was there for me, my own Rebbe, I mean, meant so much. He didn't come because of me, by the way. He came because of my father. My father, you know, he had a tremendous love for my father. My father was the Talmud of his father. So that was it. I remember we made Sheva Brachas once for my friend Pinky Weinberger and Rav Goldwich, the Rashiv of Kerem Yavne, came. The whole Simcha was changed completely. So that's not what we're talking about here. When we talk about Kol Tzarko, you know, I'm busy learning, and if I'm not going to show up at someone's wedding or at a funeral because already 600,000 people there without me, that's because my presence is not going to change anything qualitatively. I just want to make sure that we understand that. That's critical. V'kama Kol Tzarko, Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Inya, and that name is new to me, Inya. It sounds like a Hungarian name. I don't know. Anyway, Mishmei Derav, Tresar Alfi Gavri Vishisa Alfi Shipure. Again, I don't know. This, to me, the Gemara sounds like a, what you call a Hagzama. You know, this is an exaggeration. I don't know if you take this Gemara literally. Do me a favor, Eric, if you can't, check out the footnote. If anybody says this is just an exaggeration. They used to have a minhag there of blowing a shofar, but to require 6,000 shofar blowers plus 12,000 people who are on foot, a total of 18,000, if my math is correct.
This has a whole comment, and it's citing actually Shulchan Aruch.
I don't have access to Shulchan Aruch. It's probably Yerodea, probably.
Yes, Yerodea. Oh.
What number are you looking at? Because today I don't have my Masifta.
362. So would that be?
What note? I'm just asking. What note number?
Number three. Oh,
number three. So that's going to come. That's going to come up later. He's already anticipating what the Gemara is going to say later on.
But
I was asking something else. The Gemara is talking about 6,000 shofar blowers.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you guys, we live in a very fancy, you know, contemporary life, you know, with neon lights. And have you ever seen 6,000 shofar blowers? And I can't even imagine it. Even at the Kotel, you know, they have this Machon LeMikdash, you know, they created some trumpets and stuff like that. But 6,000 trumpet blowers, I mean, that's like Hagzama, I don't know. So I don't know whether to take this Gemara literally.
This says it was customary to found. I guess the reason I was looking at three was because it's talking about that. This.
Yeah, number four. This, right, he tells us about the shofar blowing.
This is a talk because this is talking about this. I mean, it's saying that this is about a Talmud Chacham.
Yeah, we're going to get to that soon. You know,
so it is. You know,
but 6,000 shofar blowers. Again, I can't. You know, I can't blow a shofar. Once in my life, I blew a shofar for an old age home. And I almost died. I mean, I blew my guts out. You know? But 6,000 shofar blowers, you know, that's like playing shofar, I think, is almost as you know, maybe even more difficult than blowing a trumpet.
Right,
you
hold
know?
On. Sorry. They called me three times now. We're going to have to tell them
not. Oh, okay. So I'm going to finish up, Eric. Hopefully you'll be here. So he says the following. V'amrilei, there's another girsa, also in the name of Rav. Tresar Alfi Gavra Uminayu Shisa Alfi Shipure. So you subtract the 6 from the 12, meaning the total number is 12,000. Again, 12,000 is a heck of a large, you know, funeral. I don't know, 12,000. I mean, we have funerals today. I think when the Rosh Shiva of the Mir of Nasa Tzvi died, I think there were, I don't know, somebody told me there were 150,000. I don't know what the numbers are. But still, 6,000 shofar blowers. That's really impressive. The Amalei, others say, Tresar, Alfi, Gavri, Minayi, Shisa, fine, that we saw. And Ula, Omar, Kigon, Dechaitse, Gavri, Meabula, Ad Suvra. Okay, so you know what? This, I'm looking at my watch, and I think we'll stop here because I'm on foot today. So I don't have a watch. I don't have a so I have to get over to there.